Okay, so as you know, well, I mentioned anyway, we've been really busy on the text machine. So I want to get to some of those now because it's been really busy. Let's see. Hi, Greg. I'm so glad more people are coming forward for help. I grew up in a one-parent family. We had very little and were too proud to ask for help in cases like ours. It's the children who suffer. Thank you, Greg. That comes in from Maria. And thank you, Maria. And it's very important that we lean on each other in times of need. Sympathy for hospital sector or hospitality sector wears thin with ample evidence of price gouging, treatment of overworked underpaid staff, up to cases this week of wage deductions after customers doing a runner and not paying and never passing on any VAT cuts and credit to customers. Okay, I take your point. Thank you for that. Remember the last time we were blowing our trumpet about how we were the wealthy country? Then what happened? I think they're referring to the crash then. These American companies in Ireland are about to end because Trump's going to make it attractive to take them home. I'm not really actually sure Trump's going to win that election, but I appreciate your comment. Another, Ireland is one of the only countries in the EU with a rising population. We've created an open border. We've the highest rising population, but most countries in Europe are recording an increase in population. I do appreciate your call, though. Some small businesses are just staying open to keep the employees they have in jobs and local community service. And that is it. And I think really Seamus McDay pointed to that a lot of businesses are operational. Wages are getting paid, but the business owner themselves is effectively on minimum wage or less. Social welfare is larger here than in Strabane. Try renting a house in Lifford and renting one in Strabane. There is a huge difference. So it's cheaper in Strabane, I presume you're suggesting, and also cheaper to live. Deprivation today is caused by addictions of alcohol and or gambling. Maybe time for food stamps to be handed out instead of money, which can feed these addictions. I get where you're coming from, but it's really important that I don't think it was suggested, but I want to make it absolutely clear that I am sure the overwhelming majority of families that are seeking help, it's not because of an alcohol or gambling addiction. Of course, that's going to be a factor in some scenarios. But if you look at the minimum wage, you look at having one or two kids, you look at living on your own, you're looking at rent, trying to keep a car on the road, childcare costs, trust, you can have two people working 40 hours per week in the one house, and very quickly that money runs out on the everyday costs. So it's just the working poor is what we're talking about as well. A significant number of fathers and mothers are alienated from their children too. Women do a runner as well, Greg. All in all, the children suffer whether a parent does a runner or a parent is alienated. Many single parents are not single and many are receiving maintenance and stopping the mother or father seeing their child. Of course, listen, there are examples of everything. And I do understand and I suspect this texter has a particular interest in this and I respect it. But as a man, it's far more comfortable for me to talk about what I observe mostly. And that is, it seems to be I was a single parent family myself, but I was the person, right? For different reasons, obviously. So I am acutely aware that family makeup can be different. It was just a more comfortable scenario for me to put across. And I do think fellas also have to take a lot of responsibility too in terms of doing more in terms of paying money, if they've got money to help support their children, if they're not living with them, and also, stepping up when they need to step up. Sometimes people, regardless of their income, live beyond their means. We were raised, if you can't pay for it, you can't afford it, but credit cards came along and everyone thought it was free money and ended up in serious debt. Addiction, says another, is a very big cause of lack of money in homes, certainly, no doubt about that. Back to school money seems to be handed out to families who use it for a holiday. These schemes need to be means tested as opposed to be given out across the board. And I would love the public's view to be taken on board in relation to that, because I think the general public would prefer to see money genuinely going to those that need it most. But I could be wrong in that regard, but that's, that is my genuinely held view. Via email, Greg, it's called minimum for a reason. We have a cost of living crisis. Sorry, it's called it for a reason. We have a cost of living crisis, but we also have terrible wastage. If cost cutting at government level was implemented, then we would all have money in our pockets to keep restaurants or restaurants, etc. open. Children's Hospital doesn't even make the tip of the iceberg. And I mean, it's not just exclusive to our country in that cozy chat between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Elon Musk was pushing for a I don't know what you might call it, a committee or a branch of the government to oversee spending, because misspending of public funds is seen by many as the driver of inflation. So maybe there is an argument for that, more oversight on government spending. Businesses will not suffer because of €1 increase, as they simply always increase their prices. The price of tea and coffee is far too high. People should be paid a proper wage. Most people in business expect too much profit from their business. Yeah, I get where you're coming from, but you know, if you have a business, you have the premises, so that's a certain amount a week. Then you have the insurance, which is a certain amount a week. Then you have to pay water rates, which is a certain amount a week. And I'm probably missing stuff out here. Then you have to pay your heat and energy, which is another amount of week per week. Then you have to buy in products, coffee, tea, or food. That's another bill every single week. You know, your furniture, all the other overheads. You have to pay obviously the council. You have to pay your rates. So you layer all that on there, and then you sell a cup of coffee. And how much that cup of coffee is taken with all of those bills that you have to pay? And it could be the same for a glass of Coke in a pub or a pint of Guinness. How much of it's going to Diageo, and how much of it's going to the government, or how much of it's going to the council? And then you have 8 staff or 9 or 10 staff who could be on the floor, and that's an extra tenner an hour, which is an extra 80 quid a day, and so on and so forth. So you can... I mean, the business overheads are huge. It's not €1 per member of staff across a medium-sized business. It's not insignificant. And I do know businesses are trying to keep the costs down, but they have to put the costs there to... And in fairness, they're entitled to build in a level of profit too, aren't they? I don't know. Whoa, just wow. Did they say that if struggling businesses should basically shut down? That's a privilege. Talking there, it's basically advocating the closure of small local businesses and local communities. The multinationals and large corporations are going to be okay, but small businesses gone. It's almost like they're trying to do away with the middle class and just have little worker bees for the elite. Another, the panel's attitude just shows the divide in how people live. Most of my children are in Australia, so I'm paying a very expensive price for the life of luxury your panel is living. I recently paid €29 for fish and chips in a restaurant. The simple fact is my eating out 2-3 times a week is cut to once a month. It's no wonder restaurants are closing. Another, the living wage is to be so high because Ireland has such a high cost of living. It's very expensive to work and live in Ireland, and it's only getting worse. Mary's very badly informed. Seamus and the other man are correct. Another, hi Greg, businesses can't afford to give another wage hike. They're going to close a lot of small businesses, they say. Just two more before we take a quick break. Check out how many properties are available to rent in Ukraine online, and then ask yourself, why are Irish hotels being used to house Ukrainians? Well, I mean, anyone's free to go and move to Ukraine and live there, even if you're from Ireland. Personally, I wouldn't take my family there, firstly, A, because I wouldn't want my sons conscripted to fight a Western war under the Ukrainian flag. And secondly, I wouldn't want them to be hit in the head with a missile from Russia either. So, I mean, I'm not saying I just simply wouldn't live in that country myself. I don't know what about you. I'd just take my kids and get out of there, especially the boys of fighting age being sent compulsory, via conscription, being sent into Russia to secure land. Sitting ducks, effectively, for missiles and drones, getting blown to absolute bits. And for what, really? Really, for what? I know it's for the defence of Ukraine, but listen, it's much greater than that. So no, I don't blame anyone for leaving Ukraine, especially if they've got young children. They're literally dragging people off the streets to go to the front line, into the meat grinder, as they call it, for a reason. Hi, Greg. When we grew up, never in my life until I worked myself did I set foot in a cafe, hotel or any eatery. Too many opened and too many people don't cook at home. And Mary is 100% correct. Okie doke. Let us take a break. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show in just a couple of moments. Stay right where you are. Moving on in the programme now, and we're joined on it by Conor Moylan of Madden and Finucan Solicitors. This afternoon, news emerged that Minister for Justice Helen McEntee has rejected a call to establish a judge-led commission of inquiry into the murder of a former senior Sinn Féin official and MI5 agent in Donegal 18 years ago. You'll remember Dennis Donaldson was shot dead in a remote cottage in Glenties in April 2006, 4 months after fleeing Belfast following his exposure as an agent for the police and British Security Services. Conor, before we sort of get into what the Justice Minister had to say. What are the family claiming? What do they want?
Well, I think it's very clear. The family want a judge-led commission to examine all of the evidence. Whilst there is an inquest going on, they don't feel it's sufficient. There has been 27 adjournments to date, and likely be another one this year.
And do they feel the inquest is teethless, a waste of time, or what's their view?
Very much at this stage, yes. As I say, due to the 27 adjournments, all of which have been requested by the Inglis O'Connor, I mean, they're no further on than they have been 18 years ago.
And the answers that they want, I presume, is, well, questions over how he was handled, but also, you know, what actually led to his death and who may or may not have been complicit in that.
Absolutely, that's correct, yeah.
So what can you tell us about their concerns or what they see may be the scenarios?
Well, the concerns is that it has taken this length of time, and as I say, there's been no real further progress. It's been 18 years since Dennis was murdered, and there's been no convictions, and the family still have a lot of answers regarding his possessions, his notebook that was kept in guarded possession. The reason for that being that it's a live investigation.
And what about in relation to these suggestions that maybe there were people complicit in his murder that were involved in handling him? Can you tell us any more about that?
Well, as I say, I mean, that's certainly the family's belief. We are seeking answers to try and establish if that is the case. And if so, the family should be afforded the information.
And what is the reaction to this announcement from Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, the rejection of a call to establish this judge-led commission?
Yeah, I mean, the family is very disappointed in it. It seems that every corner of the turn when they're asking for assistance, it's just being shot down.
And can you outline for us what the difference between the likes of a judge-led commission versus the ongoing inquiry? Obviously, the frustration with the inquiry and the adjournments and what have you, but what is the precedent for a judge-led commission? How might that be a judge-led commission of inquiry? How might that be different to what's currently going on?
Well, as you may be aware, a lot of the coroners in the Republic of Ireland, they're not legally qualified. A lot of them are doctors and GPs. A judge-led inquiry would give an aspect who could give more weight to the client's rights, their Article 2 rights, into a fair investigation into the death of Dennis.
And of course, the family are also seeing how others, Steak Knife has been mentioned, as he's come to be known, how they were may have been protected in their roles, whereas the feeling is that Dennis Donaldson didn't enjoy the same level of protection.
Yeah, again, that's very much the family's belief in that we have seen it with a number of state agents. You know, once they were exposed, they were taken away, identities changed, and afforded a lot of protection. Dennis, in this situation, he was up with Donegal, and what happened, happened.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, we'll follow with interest. For now, Conor Moylan of Madden and Finucane Solicitors, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Nigel.
Bye-bye. All right, that was recorded just a little earlier on. Live with me now is Cathal. Cathal, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
Thanks so much for your patience. Okay, so you were looking to renew home insurance. Tell us the situation, your experience.
That's correct, Greg, yeah. I got in my quotation and I thought it was a wee bit high, and I never bother really looking for another supplier or anything. But this time I just looked and I thought, this is high. So I started to read the small print of it, and I came across what's called important information. And in that, they discuss what they call partial damage. And I'll quote exactly what they call partial damage. For example, if your house is insured for $300,000, but the full cost to rebuild the property is $400,000, this means that you're underinsured for $100,000, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
The damage occurs to the home, and the cost to repair the damage, say, in another situation, would be $100,000 to repair partial damage. Where the condition of averages applies, a deduction of 25% is made from the cost of repairs. Therefore, the most the policyholder will receive is a payment of $75,000, Greg. I cannot get my head round this, simply because the guy insured my house, say, for example, for $300,000. This is just indicative from the company. You know, would you not expect, if you had your house insured for $300,000 and you made a claim for $100,000, that it would be honoured?
100%, yeah, you would. I mean, that would be the starting position, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. You see, that's where I have great umbrage with that, Greg. You know, simply because, like, you've been on all morning and your panel, mm-hmm. and we're discussing the cost of living, and you know the genuine, you know, hardship that people are experiencing. Like, for example, if you had $100,000 of damage to your house, you know, going by this document, and you went to get it repaired and it was $100,000, well, the insurance company would only give you $75,000 and you insured for $300,000. Surely somebody needs to take a look at this, Greg, you know? Because to me this doesn't make any sense other than it's kinda empowering the insurance company not to pay you the amount that you think that you're entitled to.
So, Cahill, I mean, obviously you can see the shortfall. If you insure for $300,000, your house is worth $400,000 to rebuild, you're down. But they scale that down even if your claim is less than the full cost of your insurance.
That's what I can't understand, Greg. Yeah. Like, under their own stipulation here, that if your home is insured for $300,000, and you make a claim then for $100,000, they say that they're only going to pay you $75,000.
Yeah.
And they call this the average applies. It doesn't apply,
mm-hmm.
simply because you're paying for €300,000 worth of cover. So how can you explain to me, or anybody can explain to me, how, you know, they can arrive at this amount?
No.
You know, simply because, You know, like, the difficulty in this is, Greg, like, it's back to what we can and can't afford. Everybody likes to have their property insured, the roof over the head, and, you know, for, you know, just if you're unlucky that something does happen to you. And now, looking at this here, if it's a case that something did happen to you, I mean, where do they think people's going to get this extra $25,000?
The thing about it, Cahill, is this, and I think this is the real lesson from your telephone call, is not that, oh, let's highlight how bad home insurance companies are, because they're not going to change, Cahill, are they? This is to make sure, I think it's a fantastic reminder, please insure your house for how much it would cost to reinstate it as it is now. Not how much you might get if you put it up on daft.ie, but how much it would cost to rebuild it and to restock it with furniture. I was one of those people, Cahill, for many, many years. I undervalued my house playing the short game. Do you know what I mean? To try and keep the cost of house insurance down. Thankfully, 5 or 6 years ago, I woke up and I realised, look, you have to, and it doesn't necessarily affect the cost that much. You have to insure your house. If you're lucky enough to be able to insure your house, and thousands aren't in this bloody county, but if you're lucky enough to be able to insure your house, please make sure it's for the full rebuild cost, and the kitchen and the bathroom and the shower and the second toilet, if you're lucky enough, and your furniture and everything, Cahill. And that's the real message coming from that I'm getting from you.
Oh, definitely so, Greg. But also, I would like somebody to take a look at this situation, you know, simply because if I think that I'm insured for $300,000 and I have damage to my house for $100,000, I expect to be paid in full.
Yeah, no, I get that part of it. I just don't think that's ever going to change.
Yes.
I think what we might change is us undervaluing our properties, Seamus. I think that's the best chance we have. Because the insurance companies, and we've seen it now, they're a law unto themselves.
Yeah.
Do you remember all of the chat? Do you remember all the chat about...
That's why I wanted the conversation with you, Greg, yeah, this for morning. Sure. You know, was just for people like myself. I never looked into this in my life. It's the first time.
And it's the same with the car as well, by the way, you know. It is the same with the car.
Yeah, I found it very, very interesting. And, like, I don't mind the part of, you know, me getting the calculation wrong.
Yeah.
I don't mind that part of it. But I certainly do mind them deducting, you know, pro rata, you know, the percentage shortfall from less than the sum insured. This for me, I just don't get this.
Yeah.
Are you with me? I just don't get it. But for people just to check.
But also too, Cahill, people go, well, I don't know how much it is to rebuild the house. I was speaking to a representative of one of these companies and they did ask the square footage of the house and they did work with me to get a proper valuation of rebuild. In fairness to them, I will say that. So have that conversation because they have a tool that will help in that regard. Cahill, great advice. Thanks very much indeed.
No problem, Greg. Bye-bye. Enjoy your show. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Cahill. So it's a fantastic reminder. It really is. Cahill enjoys the show. And again, thank you so much. It really frustrates me because when they release new listenership figures, the embargo's at 12. We can't talk about it before 12. And then what happens is by the next day, it seems like old hat. And also it feels like you're blowing your own trumpet, but it's not actually. It's just a thank you because, as I said yesterday, we have 90,000 listeners to Highland Radio across the week, which is just absolutely remarkable. That's how many people we reach. And, you know, this show is really well listened to, and more people are listening to us now than were this time last year, which, again, not because I think we're doing anything better or worse, it's just that people's habits change. So it's so encouraging to me that more of you are listening today than you did this day last year, and we keep going in that direction, which is fantastic. And also, too, just to mention the figures for all the weekend crew, all the fantastic shows. Like, I mean, it's obviously I come in here Monday to Friday, right? So I listen to the radio at the weekend, but sometimes forget to mention between the sports crew, the sports show, you know, Rory, Canis, Paul, Keith, all of them. I don't want to leave anyone out. That do fantastic at the weekend. The figures for the weekend listenership are astonishing, brilliant. The station is as popular at the weekends as it is during the day, so fair play to all of those. And then after 7 o'clock, we've fantastic shows as well throughout the course of the week. And we remember when they weren't there, do you remember? But it was clear when they came back that loads of you flooded back to listening to the radio in the evenings as well. So it's fantastic from our perspective here in this show, but just right from everyone who works here at Highland Radio that we are consistently one of the top two radio stations in the country. If you ever look at the figures, it really is quite remarkable. It's always sort of kind of neck and neck between us and Midwest. And then there's this gap whereby people have different listening habits in different parts of the country. But particularly our colleagues down at Midwest do amazing work. We're always sort of neck and neck on the most popular station in the country, dependent on the figures. But one thing that we're untouchable on is how long people listen to us for, because when people switch on Highland, amazingly, they keep listening, which is fantastic. And that means that's the market share, by the way. And ours is over 60%, and that's far and away ahead of any other radio station in the country, no, local or national. So we have the best listeners and the most loyal listeners. It's really, really fantastic. And not just for this show, but from Lee in the morning to Tommy, whoever it is at night. And then, as I say, the weekend crew's doing amazing stuff as well with huge listenership to their shows. So thank you all very, very much. It's very much appreciated. Eamon Harvey joins us on the programme. Eamon, how are you?
Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
And yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. Eamon Harvey, for those who are not aware, is one of the key figures and has been one of the key figures for a very, very long time in athletics in Donegal. And anyone in the know knows that. But there's a handful of names of people that have been incredibly influential in creating talent, you know, harnessing talent, developing talent, and spending many's a wet evening with a whistle in your mouth, Eamon, trying to find the next Kelly McGrory. As I say, those who know you, yeah. But it's just for those who don't. You were Kelly McGrory's first coach. And Kelly, of course, and the rest of the Irish team done us really, really proud. But Kelly obviously is a very local girl from Lahey there, and she's coming home for her coming home celebrations later today, this evening. Eamon, you know, you've worked with so many different young people and not so young people. Do you spot something early on?
Well, in teenage years you do, but not, can't even join the athletic club. I actually went to the Abbey Vocation School here in Donegal Town, where the reception's been held this evening at 5 o'clock for her. She would have been, and she would, basically would have been introduced to athletics there as well. But yeah, in her early teenage years, yeah, you would have spotted it, because basically at that particular stage, remember she went over the British Championship, where she finished second in 300 hurdles and a number of other events. That said, yeah, she showed a lot of promise. But roughly at 14, 15 years of age, she would have shown a hell of a lot of promise, yeah.
And is it a case that there's a natural ability, and, you know, you can see the ability to improve on that with, you know, training and what have you? Or is it a dedication to training and you already see her trying to maximise her capabilities, if that makes sense?
Well, it's like any sport, there's three things you need. One is natural ability, I suppose. Two is drive yourself, that you want to do it, etc. And three is, of course, support service, that'll be coaching and all that type of thing. There's so many people that have talent that do not come through, do you understand me? So basically it's that need not want to come through that sets the Kelly McGrory's apart. And yes, we'd have seen that quite early with her, say in her teenage years, she would have been that type of, you could have seen that, yeah, she was going to get all she could from the talent that she has. And she was very talented even at that, as a teenager.
Yeah, because there's so many things that have to happen, and I'm going to miss some out. But firstly, you have to be born with something. But secondly, you have to work hard at it. Then you need to bump into the right coach who will push you on. Then you sort of have to have the family network there to sort of support you and take you to the training and all that kind of stuff. There's so much has to happen, isn't there, Eamon, before you get to this world level that Kelly and the rest, particularly of the 400 metres relay squad, the athletic squad. There's so much has to happen to get to that level, to be effectively the fourth best team in the entire world.
Absolutely. I mean, it's we nip ourselves here in Donegal at the moment. I'm back in the club here. Here's somebody who joined our athletic club as a 12-year-old, and all of a sudden here, up here, 12, 14 years later, she's ranked in the top, on a team that's ranked in the top four in the world. Would, of course, have been done very, very well at European level, which would have got me. The Europeans were held there in Rome just 3 months ago, and then, of course, now at the Olympics, yeah. But again, yeah, you need, an old saying in sport, you need to pick the right parents. You need to have something in the genes, okay, but probably far more important, you need all the support service. You need a coach, you need support service and all that, and you need, of course, your parents and all that. There's so many factors that will influence you getting to what we call the top. But would be really the important one is, as I say, it's from your neck up. That's the important one. You've got to have that need and that want. Okay, there's so many people that are well endowed from the neck down, and they've got so much talent and they've got so much ability and so on, but they just don't develop it fully. That's in all sports. I mean, and the dropout in sports can be. But Kelly would have had that from a very, very early age, and certainly would have been maybe fortunate enough to join a club as well, where we would have had coaching expertise in lots of different areas, everything from hurdles to jumps to middle distance and what have you. As a lot of the clubs now in Donegal would have, but we're very fortunate here in Tyrconnell to have that expertise to support her with that.
And there's just something very special, isn't there, going from the global stage. Unfortunately, she was a reserve in the final, but obviously featured extensively throughout the competition. But there's something particularly special, I think, in, you know, someone going from the global stage like that to an event like that, which is taking place this evening in the Abbey Vocational School in Donegal Town. It's a celebration event from 5 p.m. and it's a return to the roots, the sort of the beginnings of that journey. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing, I think.
Well, it's interesting. You talked about, you know, there's no such thing as a reserve. And there's six on the relay team. It's sort of like a Gaelic football team having, yeah, or a soccer team having someone. You know what I mean? So basically, it's a squad of athletes. So they would pick four depending on the availability, et cetera. So yeah, basically, she was in the semi-final, of course, where she helped the team qualify for the final, where they finished third and went into the top eight in the world then to run the final, of course, yeah. Yeah, it'll be very special tonight for local people here, for her family, for the local community, for the club, and for all athletics people and non-athletics people here in Donegal. It's a very special night.
Yeah. And what about you? What's your feelings, Eamon?
What do you mean, what's my feelings?
What's your feelings about tonight? But you've been there, you remember her from the early days, you know, you've watched on the Great Bride.
Well, of course. very, very emotional when I watch the finals and the semi-finals, of course. Why wouldn't you be? And feeling tonight, I mean, here you've got somebody who you saw as a child and as a teenager and develop, comes to them. Here she comes back now as an Irish representative, Olympian, who finished fourth. Yeah, quite emotional, to be truthful. But delighted and proud, of course, obviously.
Brilliant stuff. All right, Eamon, listen, thanks for sparing the time this morning. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Greg.
All right, take
care. Good talking to you again.
You too. All right. Eamon Harvey there, Kelly McGrory's first coach and of the Tyrconnell Athletics Club. And Kelly from Lahey, back for a big Donegal welcome home from the Paris Olympics. It's this evening. It's at her old school, of course, the Abbey Vocational School in Donegal Town. That school is hosting a special celebration event. It starts at 5 p.m. Now, I think it was scheduled previously at 6. So I've got the figures right. It's definitely 5. So if you can get along and show her a big special thank you. By the way, if you are ringing us, we're going to get back to everyone. We'll take names and numbers. There's been a huge response on the phone lines for those trying to get in to get a ticket for our $2,500 at 11:30. $2,500 next week, $2,500 the week after, $2,500 the week after that, and €10,000. You've about 20 minutes to get your ticket to be in all 5 draws. If you're watching, there's the draw drum. You'll see it all unfold here live. I can't wait to see. By the way, we don't have to call you back. You don't have to answer in 5 rings. There's none of that malarkey. You simply... Okay. All right, okay, very good. Sorry, Caroline's speaking into my ear. You don't have to answer in 5 rings or nothing. Your number's associated with your name. If the ticket comes out, you can be up Kilimanjaro. We'll wait till you come down and we'll wait till you come down and give you the cash. Right, okay, so we were talking about Kelly's homecoming. Our head of sport, Oisin Kelly's with us. What else is happening?
Obviously, Greg.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jeez. Nearly afternoon.
Sorry, could you pass in Oisin's manners? He seems to have left them at the front door there. Go ahead.
I was instructed by your senior producer to come in and give you an update on of the homecomings.
All right, dear, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Listen, it's brilliant that our Olympians are coming home and they get the chance now to go back to the clubs. They had that homecoming on Monday in Dublin. Sensational scenes up O'Connell Street. And fully deserving, all the athletes. And likewise, the Donegal contingent are going to have their homecomings this weekend. As you know, Kelly's hers today from 5 o'clock. And Rachel Dara, the badminton player from Rafoe, will be back at Rafoe Badminton Club this evening at around 8 o'clock. So I'm sure there's going to be a big turnout of members of the club and friends and family and people in the area to welcome back Rachel Dara.
And we have to put it in the context, the Olympics is global. This is the best of the best of the best of the best of the best from around the world. To be able to call yourself an Olympian, very, very few people are able to do that. And yet we are welcoming those home.
We're welcome three of them home.
From our little county.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Mark English tomorrow as well, back at Fun Valley, 2 o'clock. Is the start time for that homecoming tomorrow at the Fun Valley Centre. So it's a busy couple of days as our Olympians return to their home patch, Greg.
As a student in the Abbey Vocational School, I do remember Eamon Harvey, he was my PE teacher for as long as I was there. Yeah. And I think he saw something in me in the javelin. I think he did.
He might have been telling you that.
Yes, but I think he did. But obviously, at the same time, I had the managers and coach at Neat Breach saying, Greg.
Yeah. Are you trying to fill time to 11 o'clock?
No,
that's the only response I have.
Some of this is true. Some of it's kind of true.
But I would need to speak to Eamon on that. Don't
he won't remember. He won't remember. But he says, you know, you can throw a javelin. I don't think if he ever thought I'd be actually an Olympic quality. All right, brilliant stuff. So just to recap, we've got Kelly
at 5 o'clock this evening in Donegal Town. Yeah. And then this evening at 8 in Rafoe at Rafoe Badminton Club.
Yeah.
The return of Rachel Dara. And then tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock at the Fun Valley Centre, Mark English will have his homecoming reception.
And listen, other people are at different stages of their career, but what a servant to athletics and Donegal Markling English is.
He's been brilliant. You know, he's been brilliant.
You know, and Kelly has all of that ahead of her and she's already doing brilliant things.
Yeah. And Rachel has it ahead of her too.
Of course,
she's a very young girl, first Olympics as well. So they'll all be targeting LA now next time round.
And who's to say what Mark will do? But he's just been, one of our best sports persons ever, I think.
Oh, without doubt. Yeah. He's one of Donegal's greatest athletes.
For sure.
And like, he's a multi-championship medalist. So he is at outdoor and indoor. and he's represented his county and his clubs and the country, of course, fantastically during his time as well. And he's, this year, even though he didn't have a medal and he didn't make the Olympic final, Mark has been putting in some of the best times of his career. Of his career, no records.
All right, great stuff. Thanks, Oisin. Back with more after the news.